Improving Society in less than 30 minutes. The short podcast of Körber Stiftung.
Just imagine you would be punished for speaking the truth. What might feel wrong to most of us already happens in some countries. There are many stories to tell, and one of them is the one of Yavuz Baydar. He's a well-known journalist and he had to flee from his home country, Turkey, as it became too dangerous to continue his work there. The freedom of the press is at stake, not only in Turkey. Find out how his life changed in more than 10 years of exile and what he wishes for in this episode of Improving Society with Yavuz Baydar. Moin! So, hello.
Hello, hello, Diana. Good to be with you.
Great to have you on the podcast. Good to be here again. I mean, 7 years ago, you visited or were a guest at the Körber Forum and you were talking about your situation. Obviously, a lot of people would like to know what has changed since then. So can you tell a little bit about what has changed for you in these 7 years?
Some things have changed, some things haven't. In between my first visit and appearance at Körber Stiftung in Hamburg, mm-hmm. I also wrote and published a book in German by Drömer Knauer, Hoffnung stirbt am Bosporus.
Yes.
That was dated late spring of 2018. The book had quite a pessimistic thesis about missed opportunities, lost chances, collectively speaking, including the media, but also other segments of the society, seeing this great chance of approaching, coming closer to the European Union membership, meeting the Copenhagen criteria. But that opportunity was lost. The train is gone, more or less, and we are just seeing the backside of the last wagons, so to speak. So the thesis, ground thesis of the book is still holding to my displeasement, to my unhappiness, because I was hoping that the book would lose its validity. But today, in 2024, we had last year in May one election. Within less than a year, actually, we had two elections. And this happened to coincide with the centennial of the Turkish Republic and existential momentum, actually, and also momentum for reflection. May elections didn't meet the grand expectations or illusions of the opposition and its voters, because again, we saw President Erdogan being reelected again, and also the power structure around Erdogan is still solid. Fast forward 10 months, approximately, we have had the late March this year, local elections.
Yes.
And local elections was of a different nature as a result. It was seen as a slap in the face of for the President Erdogan, because it showed erosion of the party, Erdogan's party, AKP, and also rise of the main opposition, secular, centrist, Republican, CHP party. But local elections are local elections, and the national elections, parliamentary, presidential elections are different. So local elections usually, I think elsewhere too, not only in Turkey, show kind of a red, green, or yellow card by the electorate on the national policies. So the Turkish electorate, to cut it short, is continuing to be discontented, continuing to be unhappy with the general policies and management styles of Erdogan, but also not really trustful of the main opposition party, because immediately after the local elections, we still see about 30% of the Turkish electorate undecided or in protest mode, despite the result. And I tend to connect this phenomenon to the state of journalism in Turkey, because distrust is not only about politics or political class, but also the state of the media, the erosion and near collapse of journalism as we know it. So that's where we are right now.
Thanks for summing that up. I mean, it's quite a thing at the moment to be looking at the insecurity about many people in terms of politics. But as you've just stated, I mean, this obviously also has an impact about the press freedom in Turkey. And when we look at the press freedom index, maybe you can explain a little bit about the history of this index, then Turkey was ranked 158th out of 180 countries. So this situation, given the local election result that you've just stated, is there hope or is there a change in sight? What do you think?
Let me just begin by saying that there are three major indexes. Mm-hmm. There are others, but three major indexes that really count. One is the Freedom House Index. The other one is Reporters Without Borders Index. Mm-hmm. And the third one is Committee to Protect Journalists Index. The worsening of the situation began more or less 10 years ago, immediately after the, you know, famous Gezi Park protests in Istanbul, when in the spring of 2013, late May, there were, you know, street protests, square protests spreading over to almost all the provinces within a week. And that was a cultural resistance, mainly by the youth, discontented again with the policies based on impositions of strict cultures, you know, abortion issues and kissing bans in the metro stations, etc., etc. And immediately after this, Freedom House saw decline, sharp decline, and in 2014 declared for the first time Turkish media as not free. And fast forward again, year after year with the Reporters Without Borders, while continuing, but Freedom House continuing to mark Turkey as not free up until today in terms of media and internet freedom. Reporters Without Borders Index showed also a downfall up until today, CPJ as well. So this explains how the oppressive atmosphere in the country, jailing of journalists or kicking the journalist out of his jobs, unemployment of non-desired, independent, decent journalists, and also the measures of, especially after the attempted coup d'etat in 2016, pushing people beyond borders, Kurdish and Turkish journalists. So the 158th position, almost rock bottom of the world index, lining up Turkey together with the most oppressive regimes in the world, is quite telling, actually.
100%.
And also disregarded, in a way, by Turkey's allies in the West. This is a very strong indicator. There are two strong indicators, I think, in judging any regime. Judiciary, state of the judiciary, and state of the media. Third estate and fourth estate. Mm-hmm. And fourth estate is not in a good shape because being number 158 amongst, you know, nearly 190 countries shows also that the media capture, as we say it, you know, the power basically encircling the media sector and grabbing it for its own purposes, for its own interests, for its own propaganda aims and objectives. Now we have a continuing state of media in a sense that 92, 93, 94% of the media sector is under the direct or indirect control of the regime that's represented by President Erdogan. Only the approximately 8% of the media sector are somewhat independent, critical, but under immense pressure of censorship and the financial strains. So that's what this index is telling us, is showing us.
So you just talked about the coup d'etat 2016, and this is when you had to flee into exile.
Correct.
You're speaking now about the fact that there is only 8% of independent or critical journalism, which is extremely under pressure. Do you still have contact with these journalists or with journalists in general in Turkey? And is it still possible to work at all?
Well, I keep my contacts, of course, my with my colleagues and continuously, colleagues meaning as independent-minded, as freedom-oriented as myself, because there are also others.
Yeah.
You compare it with Russia or Belarus or any other country or Hungary, there are pro-regime colleagues and critical independent-minded colleagues. Those contacts are continuing, but their state, because we have constant talks and chats about and comparisons about our situations, the disillusionment, even despair. Mm. Some of them had been forced to leave their jobs as experienced editors once they were, and they are no longer on the stage.
Do you know what they do now?
We used to work. Well, some of them went into early retirement. Some of them are working in other jobs, like part-time. They have, you know, Istanbul being the center of Turkish media. Many of them left to the Aegean coast, to some places, maybe working in, to an extent, with the local media, you know, more invisible, so to speak. Mm. Also, the state of media in Turkey is comparable to any country in the sense that newspapers are dying. Mm. Print journalism is on life support in Turkey. The total circulation is now 1/4 of what it was 10 years ago. It was like 5.5 million of 85 million population country. Now it's not even 1 million in total. So they are dying. And people of mid-age, experienced editors, they find extreme difficulties to stay where they are in profession. And new media, digital media, seems to be a shelter for many of them. Of course, only the urban populations can follow them actively. But also television channels are continuing to be very powerful as compared to the print journalism in Turkey, because TV is the medium, like in Russia, very powerful. That's why it is under strict control of the government and the power of Ankara. Also, the most recent study by Oxford University's Reuters Institute, which came out 15th of June, telling that the decline in Turkey, as many other countries, is basically confirming what I've been telling you, that the situation seems quite desperate for especially serious journalism. I mean, serious journalism can be quite a vague term, because many people used to follow politics. Mm-hmm. The Reuters report says that it's a vertical decline now. In many countries, especially the young audiences, are less interested in following these coverage of news or commentary. So this is where we are. But there are, of course, a core of courageous journalists in Turkey. And we outside are also a small core of editors and reporters. But I think our ordeal outside now in exile or in diaspora, mainly in Germany, are comparably harder than they are, because in those environments they can find small jobs, etc., work in different jobs. But here for us in EU domain or North America, it has become, especially since the elections last May, it's become much more difficult.
I can imagine.
To make a living.
So obviously I'm very interested in how your life has changed and what challenges you are facing besides finding a job. I mean, obviously, that's one of the most challenging situations, I guess. But how would you describe your life has changed?
I can tell you, it's a very, very existential, very difficult choice when you face such a rupture in a country that you cover professionally, and also your own life. The moment of rupture was, of course, as you mentioned, the summer of 2016.
Yeah.
I myself and many of my colleagues had to make a choice, a quick one, because we didn't really know what the consequences would be. My intuition was quite quick, and I realized that this would unleash an oppressive wave against us journalists and also academia, independent academicians especially. And later on, judiciary, because that's what happens. The history of 1930s Germany is quite clear. There are lots of lessons to be learned from there. Mm-hmm. More or less, it was a copy-paste of that. And the interesting part is, of course, we loved to cover Turkey because it's a fantastic story, journalistically speaking. Mm-hmm. It's not any small Eastern European country, like, you know what happens, etc. But in Turkey, a lot of excitement and a lot of dynamism, socially speaking. But we had to make those quick decisions. It was either stay or face hardship, unemployment at best, but also jail at worst. This is what happened to many of my colleagues as we were speaking. We were chatting just minutes before. And I had to make that decision quickly, and I left quite rapidly after 36, 40 hours. And I decided to stay in Europe and continue my work and do what I know best, which is journalism. And I got settled in France. and interest, of course, for what happened immediately after the attempted coup in Germany was high. The German audience, public, was very much interested in that. So were, you know, the UK audience, so were the North American audience. And we were given possibilities, opportunities to continue to keep the flame of independent journalism up by trying to be credible sources of information. Mm-hmm. Because in Turkey, immediately after the attempted coup, the information was restricted because of fear, because of anxiety, of intimidation, oppressive measures, etc. So we could do what we could do best. And I could start with the support of some independent journalism proprietors in the UK, in London, and Ahval News Online in three languages, with a group of young editors, many of whom were based in Germany, exiled, average age 25, let's say. Mm-hmm. And we could continue with that. But I think the unfortunate thing, one unfortunate thing was the COVID. And second unfortunate thing was the inconsistent support that we were getting from European Union, the indecisiveness or, let's say, confusion in the European Union about how to handle Ankara, how to handle the power, Erdogan's power in Ankara because of the refugee state situation, et cetera, et cetera. There were lots of challenges, understandably, but also affected our work badly. And we felt more and more these strains. We were very satisfied with the work we were doing because it was a free environment. France, Germany, Netherlands, we could really do what we wanted to do. Some hardships I should mention to you, because once you are in exile media, like editor or reporter or bureau chief or whatever, you have to be very careful with your sources. Mm-hmm. Because you are abroad, and some people feel, they feel that they want to refrain from, take a step back and not join or share their work with you. Yeah. But we had very many brave reporters, both Turkish and Kurdish. We could do whatever we could do, and it made an impact. And we ended up, as of 2022, 2 years ago, with 500,000 followers in social media of Ahval News in Arabic.
Wow.
More than 250,000 followers in Turkish.
Yeah.
And about 50,000 in English. So we saw that it was a success. But then things changed. I think breaking point was the May elections. It wasn't really the expectation of Turkey's allies that the main opposition could had the chances to win. But there was again this huge surprise. And after that, I, as a chief editor, started to feel that Turkey was seen as a case incomparable to Russia, because Russia is very clear, but Turkey is a sensitive case because the president of Turkey is also commander-in-chief of the Turkish army, which is a NATO force. That is a very important part to be taken into consideration. Other things as well, you know, the relations between the various capitals in Europe, Paris, Berlin, etc. So we felt more and more sidelined, ignored or neglected in our work. And also the crisis, of course, with Ukraine and Russia brought our Russian colleagues justifiably and Belarusian colleagues to the fore. But for me, still, it is unacceptable that we should be sidelined and neglected, because Turkey's story is equally important for Europe. Relations with Turkish society and European Union societies go way back in history. There is a big diaspora in Germany or in other countries as well. So there is this overlapping factors and elements which should make the European public interested in following the story through the credible sources, not through the censored or self-censored media or propaganda machines.
Yeah.
So that's what's making me disappointed. And I hope that this wind turns soon.
Yeah. Coming from that perspective, what do you think, what kind of support do exiled journalists need to continue the work, especially Turkish, but also international?
I think the principles should remain of what makes European Union, European Union, the values and the respect for the role of the media, social role of journalism. And this should be protected, this should be cherished continuously. And that's why we hope that part of exile journalism should not be seen as something of a stumbling block between Ankara and the European Union or the West, the democratic family of countries. This should be, on the contrary, seen as a bridge of hope that, you know, the dynamism that is there and the grassroots of Turkish society, pro-democratic dynamism, which is still there, as the local elections showed, especially in the Kurdish provinces, but also in the big cities like Istanbul, Izmir, etc., where the bulk of the population live. That's what should be taken into consideration. We need the support for doing what we can best, because we are a group of very experienced journalists, and we know the main principles of journalism, and we have the sources, we have the networks. That's why I think we should not be forced doing other jobs like taxi driving or cleaning the windows, etc., like many of my friends in Europe traditionally supporting journalism really hope for, that we are really in the center of this information flow. We will need it more as the world tumbles more and more into the crisis. And Turkey should not be turned into a black hole just in the middle of this vortex. And we are the instruments, we are instrumental in, you know, shedding light, putting projectors and spotlights into this black hole and show, you know, tell the story. And as I said, I don't want to repeat myself, but this is an interesting story, continues to be an interesting story for the Western audiences.
Looking at the European elections, how do you feel about politics in Europe? And in your opinion, how should the European politics respond to the authoritarian restrictions on press freedom in Turkey?
Well, we see the rise of the extremes, especially the far right in you know, many countries, in Germany and also in France now, which has turned into a litmus test for the mood of the European Union voter, actually. But these are the elections. There are those who vote for far right. There are those who are tired of the conduct of politics in EU, but there are also others, rational forces that vote for center-left, center-right, etc., that they continue to do so, and they will remain so. The only thing that the democratic struggle will be tough, tougher than before. But the election results, I think, will be seen in two different dimensions. One is what sort of governments will be formed and how the European Parliament will work. But the other dimension is the civil society. The civil society and the structures of the European Union in Brussels, in terms of supporting the civil society, in terms of also supporting the civil societies in the periphery of the European Union. And I think those two are separate things. And that second dimension should remain unchanged and even maybe enforced more in the light of what's been happening in this part, especially if the US elections end up with another isolationist victory, as the European elections also ended up with some victory for isolationism or sovereignism, as, you know, represented by Hungary, for example. I think the more it is, the more the importance of media freedom and media independence and media pluralism will be. This is inevitable. We will continue to need the media, you know, the center field of the media, as opposed to, you know, the lying machines on the social media side. So that's why it is important that we cooperate more. Whoever we are, wherever we are in terms of journalists, we should cooperate more. We should get more and more together and solid backing and support. That's, I think, how it should be, despite the results that we see.
And you're speaking of exciting stories about Turkey. Funny enough, in Germany, you wrote 52 episodes about Turkey for Süddeutsche Zeitung in your guest column, Turkish Chronicle. So I wonder, what do you wish for in German reporting on Turkey?
What I fish for, especially for German media, because we mentioned the existence of Turkish-speaking diaspora in Germany. Some of them are citizens, some of them are not. But the German media, comparably, you know, compared to the other media, like in Italy, Spain, France, etc., is still going very strong. And the devotion, dependence of the whole public to the German media is still strong compared to the others. That's why, for both reasons, I think German media should invest more in cooperating with people like us in continuity, because I think they can afford it. Mm-hmm. And they there is an interest for it. Not only that, but also other medias like in the UK or in other countries, this should be strengthened. But I expect that German media should lead the way, mm-hmm. and should be showing examples of how this should be done, mm-hmm. how influential and efficient this is. That's how I want to see it.
And finally, looking at all those exiled journalists from various countries, from your personal perspective, is there anything you want to tell them, or you want to tell us as being able to support them what to do?
My first advice would be take care of yourselves, because mm-hmm. some regimes are dangerous.
Yeah.
That's rule number one. But feel also yourselves at home, wherever you are in the so-called EU domain, democratic domain, and try to integrate more professionally, at least, with those countries, because journalism knows no homeland. It's an international job, international work, like the doctors are. That's another advice from me to them. Integrate more, cooperate more, build bridges. Third one, despite the hardship that you faced, like myself, any journalist forced outside of his, her homeland should not fall into the traps of being a propagandist of political struggle, turn into a sheer activist. This is a trap, in my opinion. This is a very easily fallen trap. I see some examples of different nationalities in Europe, journalists turning into activists. You know, let's tear down this regime and do whatever we can. Propagandists against propagandists. This is not how it should work. I think they should do whatever they do best, be independent, accurate, maybe not objective, but honest and to the point, pluralistic, independent-minded journalists. Convey information. Whatever information you have, convey it. And this doesn't need to be information that you can use easily against a regime that you don't like or regime that victimized you. But do a journalism like your colleagues do wherever you are, you know, good colleagues. Do good journalism. That's my final advice to them.
Yeah, take care of yourself and make yourself feel at home were the first two pieces of advice you gave. Did you take care of yourself? And one thing I'd have to ask, is anything happened to you or anything you got to know while living in exile that you don't want to miss in your life from now?
My principle has not changed. At home or outside, I try to do what I know best, journalism. And I stick to my principles based on my education that I had in Sweden. That education told me enough about what journalism is about. Of course, you have to be careful. And your question is also about how I feel now. I think I feel disappointed. That's what I told you about the lack of support or diminishing support that we are having. And this is, I think, instinctive. In my backbone, I feel disappointed, not only because the support is waning, or fading, but also this exciting story, just because of that situation, fading support is being evaded. It's running away from us. Mm. We want to catch that story. We want to report that story as long as it goes. That's what my disappointment is based on. And I can tell you that I speak in the name of some of my younger colleagues that I cooperated in the past 5-6 years.
Life in exile is tough. That's what I definitely learned from you today. And also that there is passion for journalism still inside your heart. However, there is a great disappointment that is very understandable. I thank you so much for everything you shared today and for being brave enough to stand up and try to speak for those who are still fighting in Turkey. And we as a society, we as Europe, that's your wish, should support you more. And I can well understand it. Thank you very much for being on the show today. Yavuz Baydar.
Thank you, Diana. Thanks for having me.